Hosting for this podcast is made possible through mtgcast.com, which is supported by a generous contribution from quietspeculation.com, Magic's premier trading and financial news site.
Hello and welcome to At Your End Step. This is episode 3, and I am here with Jordan and Mike, as always. And we're just going to kind of break into what we have on our agenda today. And the first thing that we really kind of wanted to talk about is we had an open here in Columbus. So that's huge for us as far as that's concerned. It was very exciting. All three of us played, and actually, I know on our last podcast, Jordan said that he was going to make it, but he decided to say toodles to his friend who was getting married and come down.
Another wedding. It's fine.
Yeah, right.
Who hit him off like a cheap prostitute? Let's be honest.
Bought him a nice lamp.
I called him Friday night. Yeah, for real. I called him Friday night and I was like, hey, buddy, I love you. I just want to let you know I'm not going to be able to make it to your wedding because of overlapping commitments. And where you registered, I'll buy you a lamp. And I bought him a $100 lamp so he can bite me.
Yeah, that's fine. I think that's fair enough.
I'm sure he had fun.
A lamp for the supposedly happiest day of his life. I'm sure that would be...
Hey, I did pretty well at SCG Columbus, so it's fair. I had positive EV that weekend.
I got him a card so I could play cards.
So yeah, we all had a good time. We all played in the main event on Saturday, and you know, we kind of just wanted to recount our events that happened during the day, and you know, just kind of let you know how we played, what we played against, what the field was. Now I do know that the event was 10 rounds, so it was a fairly large event.
590.
Okay, so I didn't add the actual player count. So yeah, 590 people, which is pretty huge as far as that is concerned. A little bit less than I think last Columbus Open.
The last Open was 600 and some. It was almost a record breaker. Come on, guys.
What? Yeah. I know these numbers off the top of my head.
I was surprised at how little people there were actually for A, Origins, and then B, like the hubbub of the Midwest Magic scene.
I think that just Midwest? Might be. I think that just might be.
Hold on, I've stopped. Midwest?
Mid-east.
We're in the Midwest? Am I confused?
Mid-east? What do you
want? No, we're in the Midwest. Ohio's a Midwest state.
Yeah, we're considered Midwest. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Alright, whatever.
Yeah.
We are, alright.
We're the hub of the Midwest.
I'm not here to argue geography, alright.
Ohio's east of the Mississippi. We're in the West?
Oh my
we're
gosh.
Considered we're the Midwest.
We're midway to the West. Get out of here, English teacher.
Whatever.
Anyway, but I think that the smaller than what we had last time, that kind of, it might just be a symptom of standard, as far as that's concerned. So, what we'll go ahead and do is kind of round out our experiences there at the tournament, and then move on from there. So, who wants to start?
I can start a little bit here.
Okay.
I mean, we all tested for the event, and I played 9 midrange, as I mentioned before. Made a couple changes, played a spicy singleton Sublime Archangel, which was just the nuts, and Morgan, of course, gave me a 4-1, because for some reason, Morgan, that's all the cards you have.
Listen, I'm sorry. Chinese cards are also cheaper. I have no idea why.
You own French Voice of Resurgences.
Yeah, because they're awesome.
Yeah, cheaper, lol.
And that card actually won by itself multiple games. I'm going to up to another one next week, because the card's insane. Went 7-3. Managed to lose in wonderful fashion to the mirror and to Blitz and to Jerry Thompson, luckily not on camera. Somebody else here lost to a pro on camera. All right, Morgan, you did that. But
right, of course. Let's bring it up.
I haven't watched it yet. Have you watched
Neither have I.
Can't bring himself to do it.
I really just don't want to be criticized by Ricky Hayashi and Cedric Phillips.
At least not like Jordan. Just have Adam Prozac actually laughing at you. That was just comic book.
Oh, I'm sure they laugh at me. I'm sure they laugh at me.
Now, you know, I would like that. You know, I have all these fake feature matches, and one of the days I'd like to be, you know, get on the camera just because I'd like to be able to do that, sit there and watch it. But could have probably played a little bit better. I know in the match against Jerry Thompson, I played around a card I shouldn't have and lost. And, you know, it was a good round of Magic. Lost to Blitz, but I also beat Hexproof earlier in the day, so I feel like both of those are coin flips, so I can't be mad I lost one of them.
Yeah.
Right.
So, but the deck felt great, and honestly, as sad as it is, like, you know, for weeks I kept reading how, like, oh man, Swing's Revelation isn't good. I'm like, no, I love that card. I'm going to keep playing. I didn't play against a single one. It's just literally not control. It just isn't there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's funny you say that because that is the exact opposite experience I had.
Winning?
No. What place did you finish, Mike?
46th.
Oh, I'll take my 30th. just kidding. No, but like the aggro and you playing no control, I played control all day. The 001 bracket is a scary place to be. Drawing round one against a terrible Unburial Rites player is just not where you want to start your day. Because then you're in that weird Esper draw bracket all day where, can I beat them before Aetherlene? I hope so. that was fun. I mean, drawing round one to a guy who, like, took 30 seconds to Farseek, and then you ask the judge about it, and he gives you he's thinking through his lines of play. It was brutal. But other than that, it was pretty fun. Beat up control. Like you said, it's not a deck. Especially for Jun, when I can just, like, play threats, and they're like, oh, I guess I just hope I draw a Supreme Verdict. And then even then, it's like, okay, 3/3 tokens are sweet. So, my round one opponent missed Voiceover Surgeon's triggers and Thragtusk triggers. And you're thinking, I could understand missing the ones where I play it on his turn, right? No. He missed it when Voiceover Surgeon's died, getting his trigger. So that was interesting. He just, like, put him in the bin, and I was like, okay, and he goes, go. And I was like, all right, untap. Like, that's fine. So I don't know how I draw against this guy, but that was my day. But it was fun. Control. It was fun to play control games for the first time ever, since we don't test against those, really. But, Morgan, how was your day?
My day was, you know, fairly fun and exciting, actually. I started off real hot, as far as that's concerned. Started off to a good 4-0 before round 5. And played what I expected to see. I think the second round I played against a blue-white-red control, which gave me some issues as far as that's concerned. But nothing out of the blue. My first round opponent was Junt, which I handled pretty efficiently, and then yep. Blue-white-red. Now, round 5, I actually played against a Naya mid-range player. And we got to game 3. And during game 3, I saw at least 3 of his Domries and 3 Bonfires, and ended up losing game 3 to lose the match. So that was pretty tilting. Bonfire is a card that I have come to hate a lot at this point in time. So go on to, you know, X1. Start round 6. It's either round 6 or round 7. It was right after I lost. So, my next round opponent is none other than Jerry Thompson. So I was like, oh great, awesome, let's just play the beatdown Morgan game. This is the probably the best I've done, in a tournament since the 5K, and this is a much bigger scale, as far as that's concerned. So this is really the best I had been ever doing in a large tournament, standing as far as that goes. So, playing someone that is, you know, renowned, that has, you know, played in the Pro Tour, top 8 at a Pro Tour, playing someone that is on, you know, some recent success is pretty intimidating. But, you know, played against him, he, you know, was a very nice guy. We didn't necessarily have a whole lot of table talk or anything like that, because I didn't want to make it weird. ended up just 2-0-ing him, kind of just sweeping the match. He was playing Aristocrats, which, me playing Reanimator, as you all know, not exactly the best matchup. So it was nice to kind of get that under my belt and have a nice, clean match against him. And then we move on to the next round, table 13. And I'm starting to get ready, and the judge comes up to me, and he goes, you better not get too comfortable. So I'm thinking, fuck. I'm going to get a feature match. So now, obviously, first feature match. So there's a lot of firsts going on here. I'm like a freshman in high school over again. So
And Andrew Shrout took your virginity? Is that,
yeah,
is that what
yeah.
you're trying
to say? My on-camera virginity. He was gentle. He was very sweet. no, so I did play against another Pro Tour top 8 competitor, Andrew Shrout. Part of the legit MGT team. So, this one was not so, was not so easily fought. He was playing a deck I hadn't really play tested against, which was, Prime Speaker Bant. The deck's pretty good, obviously. I just didn't know, lines of play. I was obviously nervous on the camera, which is something that I tried to keep under control, but, talking with these guys later, you know, there are definitely some more optimal plays that I could have made. But, you know, it is what it is. Again, Andrew Shrout was very nice, and it was good to play against someone that, you know, in my opinion, is probably pretty far above my level at this point in time, but, you know, it was definitely a good experience to finally have, and will kind of lead us into a conversation we'll have later on. But yeah, after that, I played against a Jund player and lost, so that was pretty tilting, putting me at X3. There were about two more rounds left. I should have just stayed in and kept playing, but I dropped, which was probably a rookie mistake in my opinion. But, you know, it is what it is. I was pretty happy with the successes that I did have, you know, beating someone like Jerry Thompson, you know, feels pretty good. Obviously, variance always plays a key in our game, so can't necessarily say that I would, you know, the same result would happen again, but I was playing pretty tight, and, but yeah, I mean, that was my experience. Overall, I think it was good. I did money, I did sell my binder, so I did get some money out of that, but, you know, it is what it is. I mean, it's the Columbus Open. It was so much fun, and I wish we could have it every weekend.
The best part about the Columbus
Open. That was awesome. You know, you pretty much know everybody there, so it's, what?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was saying it's awesome you get to do that. You know everybody, and
right,
and like you're like oh man, I can just like go home, or I can go eat at all these places I know, and I'm not hours away from where I'm supposed to be. It's nice when it comes local.
Oh yeah, most certainly.
My favorite thing about the Opens, like, is honestly the social atmosphere, walking in and just like seeing people and not feeling out of place. You know, when I went to Charlotte, it was just like me in the corner of this 2,000 person room, and I'm just on my own. But like at Columbus Open, it's hard to walk past tables and then not see people and be able to just wave, stop by, watch their match or like whatever. Also, there's no Barley Brewhouse in Charlotte, North Carolina.
It's true. Yeah. That is a Columbus, tradition. Anytime there's a big Magic tournament, afterwards, we usually just go over to a, local eatery called Barley's that's right across the street from the convention center. It's wonderful here in Columbus. I do suggest it. We are not Barley's, sponsored anyway by Barley's.
Barley's is actually good enough that in one of one of the articles on Channel Fireball, it was they talk about it, talk about how good the food was. They really come to Columbus. I'm like, there you go. You make it. You're not even talking about Magic anymore. We're just pictures of food right in the article.
Yep, it's true. I figured who wrote that article, but
yeah, David Ochoa.
Oh yeah, it was Ochoa. Good old.
All of his articles are about food, and they just make you very sad. Like you're like, oh man, I want to eat all this.
Damn you, Ochoa! Oh man. So we wanted to kind of move on and take a look at Modern Masters. Obviously, it's been out for a while. A lot of stores are actually getting a second run of it, which is really exciting. But it is, you know, looking like this is going to be the last time that we'll see new boxes of it. Be able to crack them, smell them, smell the cards, smell the money that you're going to be getting when you open all these packs. So, you know, we kind of want to look at something that has been sort of publicized on Twitter, is that some of the cards are actually obviously being affected by price. Mainly, it's through TCG Player, just due to a lot of people, you know, anyone being able to now post cards. So do you guys have any you know, opinions on the price drops that we've seen for some of these modern cards?
I mean, I do, Mike. I don't know how mine's kind of more thought out, I guess, like,
go right ahead.
Okay, I've seen, like, I guess it depends on who you ask. I've seen some vendors on Twitter obviously complaining because they're losing value. But as me, the rando guy who wants to pick up a Dark Confidant or, like, a Tarmogoyf or whatever, paying $51 for a near mint Tarmogoyf or a near mint Dark Confidant is sweet! Like, I don't know why, like, from a player's perspective, it's the best thing ever. Yeah, like, Comic Town or rando store here, rando store there are going to be out of, like, short on money. I don't care as a private buyer, you know, like, I like the fact that I can get a card for $50 less. But then again, I don't know. Maybe I'm not thinking total package. I just think it's sweet that I can get cards cheaper. The price point of Modern is lower, and that was the whole point of this set, right? Like, or one of the sold points of the set, whether that was the actual point of the set or not, I don't know. But one of their advertising points was this is going to help the barrier to Modern go lower, and if it makes the barrier to Modern go lower, I'm totally a fan of that.
I definitely agree in the short term, and the places that are complaining, because I heard the same thing at Origins of Lunch this weekend. The same places are complaining, so if, you know, if the prices are lower, so if Dark Confound is $50 new, what are they going to buy a listed at? $25, right?
Right.
Okay, so if people who are trying to cash out sell that stuff to them, because they will, they always do, okay, right now they're going to buy them for more. Wait until, you know, in the, you know, the beginning, you know, January, February, we're back in Modern season for PTQs. Those cards are going to be back at the same prices, and the stores that complained while buying them up cheaper are going to be charging and making huge overhead.
Right, exactly. I mean, that's how it's going to be. It's always going to be, you know, always going to go in a cycle just because of the PTQ seasons, as far as that's concerned. So things that are cheap now, I mean, if you really want to buy into Modern right now, do it now. Like, honestly, I'm looking here. You can build a competitive deck for far cheaper than you ever could. I mean, Ravagers are like a whole, you know, $10 less than what they used to be, and you know that is a major point in a very competitive you know deck. You know, when you can buy into robots, you know, super cheap. You could buy, you know, Blink Moths were reprinted, Arcbound Ravager was reprinted, Glimmer Void was reprinted. All of those have seen huge price dips just because they're rares, and you can buy them up real cheap. And you know, honestly, do it now, or you'll know definitely regret it. I think a lot of things that's interesting is cards. You know, when we take a look at cards and their viability in Legacy as well, because this does impact some cards that are played in Legacy. Yeah, that's also a pretty interesting concept as well, just because it does appeal to a wider player base as far as that's concerned. Now, of course, most cards that are good enough for Legacy are good enough for Modern. But that's also a pretty interesting thing to look at here, as we see, most of the mythics though. But I mean, even like Tarmogoyf, you know, dropped technically $20. You know, the lowest that we have here is, you know, $96.95. You know, that's huge as far as that's concerned. Mm-hmm. It's not paying $120.
Well, and TCU player, that's actually a hilarious little microcosm of like Magic in general. Like,
yeah,
like,
I know it's
everyone's like, oh, the sky is falling. That's a like, but it's you guys selling it to each other, meaning you're actually getting real value. If you're willing to sell it for $6, then how is it, I mean, how is it valued anymore? So it's fairly interesting to see the people, like, who A, want to make money, but B, want to complain the sky is falling. Chaz Andres, who, and I hope, I've never heard his name spoken out loud, but, he writes for, you know, he's on the premium side of Star City, he's still on the premium, but he broke down all, like, the percentage changes this week.
Yeah.
For Modern Masters. That was pretty interesting.
Like,
the major mythics haven't changed, and that makes sense. I mean, there weren't enough Tarmogoyfs for supply already. So, realistically, even if we're only meeting supply, then there's no way the price goes down. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But some of the, like what you're saying, Jordan, you know, the uncommon specifically, you know what I mean, like Kitchen Finks and that sort of stuff, that is, I mean, we opened my box and there were three Kitchen Finks, four Path to Exiles, I mean.
Right.
You all these uncommons now that were 7, 8, Kitchen Finks, $12 a piece, you know, the meat of the deck is better. Because, you know, Legacy, they always say you can go buy a force, you know, a playset of Force of Will, and then you can start doing what you want.
Right. And now, like, you have the playset of Path of Exile, so you can do what you want, kind of thing, right? I'm following.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's just, you know, it's just giving people access to these things, which is great. And, you know, it's good to see prices drop. As far as that's concerned, so it's not something that bothers me at all. No,
like the other thing that I think is really interesting with Modern Masters, and I guess it's right next on the list, so never mind. I guess it's a natural transition. Drafting is not fun. This set is not fun to draft.
What?
I did it again last night, so that would have been my third draft. Mike's box, that box last night, and then the release draft. Oh my god, this show is not fun.
Well, you're like, just so wrong. I don't understand how you could be even more wrong than what you already are.
I spent $1 billion on a draft that I just didn't like. I don't know if it's that I don't know the cards, so I can't like just, like flip through them and pack one, pick one easy. But oh my goodness, it was. I just don't care. Like, like fairies are cool. Like, affinity's cool, but like, giants are fine. Who cares? I don't know. Like, I tried it again last night because after our last episode, you guys were like, "No, you're just wrong. You need to like it." And I was like, "Okay, bros, I'll just like it." But yeah, I don't know. I just was not a fan.
We just need to get you in. We just need to get you in cube more because you'll like it a lot more if we're in cube.
I think that's probably true. I mean, I'm really excited. I'm probably going to make a little Modern Masters cube so you can try out all these fun little mini things.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like all these little. There's actually a good article on Legit today that actually talked about the 10 different archetypes that are in Modern Masters. Hmm. And like that author, and I don't know the guy's name off the top of my head, but his favorite one was Dredge. He said it's the most like most fun thing to do in there. And I haven't even considered it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think it'd be exciting to be able to go back and not have to pay $40 each time you try it. Because we talked about that before. The price makes you afraid. You know, like I'm not going to play this terrible strategy because I just spent $40 on this.
What's that under? Is it under?
It's
on Legit right now.
It's the first article today.
Oh, under like casual or?
Just go to the. Hold on a sec. Awesome. As we're looking on the internet for all the people who are.
Yeah, we totally.
It's the first one. Ranking. It's John Cuvelier, the ranking the Modern Masters archetypes. So.
Okay.
So yeah, his number one is he's like, oh, just get a Worm Harvest, and then you have the most fun in Modern Masters. And I haven't been able to draft that yet, so I'm excited to you know turn into a cube, play with it a bunch of times, and not have to worry about the money.
Yeah, no, like it's gonna be sweet. If you're gonna turn yours into a cube, that's pretty fantastic. So.
Yeah, it was suggested you have like 3 of each uncommon and 5 of the commons. So I actually picked up a bunch of scrap for nothing this weekend. So I'm going to do that, and I'm going to cut the bulk of the rares, especially the stuff that was printed just for, like I don't want to open a sword in this draft, because it actually just breaks the format.
Right, yeah.
Resolve sword, you kind of win, right? Like,
yeah.
like yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like that, or shackles, like, I don't want, that's not something we want to open. So the stuff like, let me think here, like Lotus Bloom, that would stay in, because that's an archetype it's trying to support, but it's not overtly broken, so... Just gotta make judgment calls on that, but it should be fun.
Oh yeah, 100%, 100%. Definitely excited for when you actually, you know, put that together as far as that goes. So, but I think it's great, you know, and this is really nice because you have access to commons and uncommons. I mean, the rares might be hard to find, but you know, if you're not going for necessarily the overpowered money rares, you know, you do have access to them, and now you can you know build a cube for someone that's super easy to build and still so much fun.
Exactly. I mean,
2 out of 3 people on this podcast really do endorse the modern format. The modern
and honestly,
the two most credible. Yeah,
people.
I mean, yeah. Let's be fair.
You refer to yourself as a virgin magic player. You have no credibility in Modern Masters.
Come on. You just don't know what you're fucking doing. That's all.
No, like I really tried to like it last night, and I was just like, okay.
Well, what did you try and draft? Did you have an idea of what you wanted to draft, or was it just...
I originally tried to stay really open. I actually have my deck box right in front of me. I tried to stay really open, tried to do the right thing, you know. I really wanted to draft, I've been wanting to draft Dredge, but, like, I could never figure out how to make it work because I'm bad. Mm-hmm. So it's like, whatever, I'm just going to draft, you know, like, Affinity or Fairies or something like that. And I kept getting all these, like, crappy, like, so Goblins came by a lot, and I was like, Goblins are okay, right? They're not awful. Like, just Blue-White Flyers came by, I got Pestermites and stuff. But eventually I started getting cut, so I just went Red-White Giants.
Why is that your fallback?
Because those were all the open cards. Like, I got the Thundercloud guy that, like, deals the damage to every non-giant, mm-hmm. and I got, like, a playset of the Changelings that can get First Strike for red. Mm-hmm. So I felt like... When you're getting past that many changelings and then you're getting guys that help giants, like, you just have to go giants. And the deck was really fast in it. Like, I won a couple of games. I think I went 1-2-drop, actually, like, just because reach was bad. But, like, you know, like, if they get to turn 4, they win the draft, they win the match. But, like, I don't know, maybe I just need to, like, stick to our archetype and go.
Yeah, I think that's what's interesting about Modern Masters is, like, most of, like, in Dragon's Maze and, you know, the word, turn around Nickel Block, you want to stay open because so many colors wedge well, but like I think in Modern Masters, you want to like actually pick an archetype and stay hard to it really quickly. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes you get cut really bad, but there's enough cards, like there's enough quality for everything. Like the changelings go into so many archetypes that I think if you like push something, like Dredge, maybe not. Like you really have to have like the Worm Harvest or something else. Most of the stuff you could force. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And like that's what I have started to do anytime that I would do drafts as far as that's concerned. So I would just try to force as much as I possibly could. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, once we get the cube built, we'll probably draft a little bit more and then you'll probably get more comfortable with it. But I think it's a great draft format and it's very exciting that we're going to have access to it going forward. And it's a great idea for anyone else to try to do is build a cube, a cube from these cards. So, but yeah, I think that's great and I'm pretty excited to work with it. So we'll kind of shift here over to our question of the week. And really what we kind of wanted to take a look at is playtesting. And, you know, does playtesting work and help to increase your overall ability to be better at this game that we play? So, you know, we are going to go ahead and, you know, we obviously started a playtest group. And it was definitely spearheaded by Jordan, and we kind of just wanted to get a lot of people together to playtest.
So I was going to kind of suggest this a little bit here earlier, this idea of this playtesting work and help, not suggesting that we playtest every week. Jordan, I think that was you and another friend, correct?
Yeah, it was us and then maybe a special guest for next week. but we always wanted to do it, and then I guess like I'm just type A enough to just be like, yo bastards, let's meet here. So I don't know.
I know we have a number of people in our playgroup who like they live and breathe cube, and which is nice. It's really fun, and they have cubes that they love, take care of, and it's nice because I get to play with these cards and then never have to pay for these cards. So but at the same time, it can be a little tricky to get them to actually like actively test standard, and yeah, we play the standard a lot more. So it's been kind of nice. I think it's been awesome knowing that each week we have a time to go. We know there's going to be any number of people there and a large number of decks. And if we ask for a deck, more than likely somebody can bring it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's been very nice to be like, hey, like I want to test against this. Great, I'll have this and this. And we've done a good job. Like there's a good mix between like myself, who sometimes like, hey, I'm going to bring this. I want to cast Aether Dwelling on turn 4 deck. Can I test it? Like, sure, it may not be real, but I want to play it. And at the same time, like, hey, this just won the GP. Let's test this. So it's actually, from my own perspective, it's been really enjoyable to have just the gauntlet to run through.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I definitely like it, especially with Saturday. I mean, out of our team, like, how many people did well? You know, three of us moneyed. Morgan, and then, you know, one of the other core guys in the group almost got there and still played really well. Had a couple of just bad draw, bad luck games, like gotcha games.
That's going to happen.
Right. And, yeah. And that's why we don't play chess, right? It's because we enjoy that run of that, you know, whatever.
That we're not good at chess.
Yeah.
Fact.
That we won't win games of chess.
No Stanislav Sifka's here.
Yeah. But one thing I do think that testing groups need that perhaps ours lacks a little bit, and maybe this is just me talking about us and maybe about nothing else productive, is like more, what are we doing besides GMing games? And I think that's one thing that like to our listeners, maybe think about for your groups. Are you just GMing games or are you figuring out, man, like against these decks, I need these sideboard cards, or the matchup is like 40-60 them and I might as well not even play, or 30-70 them and I might as well not even play. And against these decks, like I can afford to forget the sideboard a little bit and focus on my worst matchups because I'm just smash them. And I don't think our group personally gets enough results oriented and thinks past that, you know? I don't think we think results oriented, but at the same time, I just think that'd be something to see us move forward is like more data collection.
You know, I would agree with that. You know, something, and I'm sorry, Morgan, I know you've, you know, spoken yet, but, you know, I'm going to still talk.
No, but it's all right.
That's what we're good at.
Something interesting from the PTO I went to week 4, another guy from the Akronair who I played with is up there. I lost a round playing against the Naya aggro deck, and I was playing Naya mid-range. So we both have Boros Reckoners, and we both actively want to have our Boros Reckoners on the field. and I lost the second game to Blasphemous Act. Okay, and I asked him afterwards, because I lost to it. I was like, oh, okay, you have Double Reckoner, I guess I'm just dead. I'm like, do you board that in against me? And he's like, yeah, I think I do. And I'm just like staring at him, because he was at 4 when he did this. So if I have a Reckoner in play, he can't win the game. He actually loses. Mine goes off first.
Right.
So I'm like, okay. And he's like, do you think it was a good call? And I'm like, it won. I'm like, but I don't think it actually is a very good sideboard card here. I mean, a lot of the times it's going to be a dead card for a long time. And you're going to have to do something drastic to try and, you know, if you don't have just like a Searing Spear, you have to do something drastic to get my card off the table to make you win. And I was talking to a guy afterwards about that round, and he's like, yes, this is results-oriented, results-oriented playstyle, essentially. So, like, he's not going to remember that that's a bad choice. He's going to remember that he won with that card.
Right.
So without the data that you're talking about, Jordan, you end up making these choices like, well, that one time, I did this, and you live in magical Christmas land.
Right. But when he stops and thinks about it for 2.5 seconds, he'll go, oh, Blasphemous Act is horrible against another Boris Frickener guy, because then I just have dead cards. So
I think the interesting thing is, in the playtesting, like, I would call you out on that, you would hopefully call me out on that. But if you're alone, you're just going to tell your buddy, I won with this! So I think the playtesting
matters, yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like the idea of, like, communities are stronger than individuals. Like, that's just a basic principle, right? And why are communities stronger than individuals is simply because, like, they have that feedback. And that's something we need to be doing, or everyone should be doing, is collecting data and all that.
Right. I definitely agree with that as far as that goes. Since I started playtesting, what I found out is that just based solely on my results since we started testing, that it has vastly, vastly improved my level of play as far as that's concerned. And I have seen it, you know, with the results that I've had.
Yeah, I mean, this weekend is good for us. I would agree with that.
Yeah, most certainly. But I mean, like, even before the playtesting group started, and I was just, you know, working with individuals to test, even then, once I started doing that and just playing more games, having more experience with the decks that I was playing, the level of play that I actually had during these tournaments was a lot more consistent, because I was just able to see a lot more of my deck and how it works with certain draws. And I think that's hugely important when testing. If you really want to be good at Magic and go to tournaments and win money and you know, maybe go on the Pro Tour and start to get on the train, you need to start playtesting, and you need to have a consistent group of people that is willing to give you feedback on what you need to do to improve your play and to improve your deck. And, you know, by having that consistent group of people that get together on a regular basis, you know, you're going to be able to, you know, really get a feel for what you're playing and what you're doing in your lines. I mean, that's the most important thing, is knowing, you know, your lines of play against certain matchups and certain decks.
Yeah, I just definitely agree. Like, you're not going to break the standard format this late in the game, you know? You're not going to come out with that one deck. Just people are just like, oh my gosh, how does that not fall into rock, paper, scissors?
Yeah, you're not Travis Wu.
Right, exactly. So I definitely think that, like, we are trying to just, like you said, get used to the deck that you're going to choose. Like, just pick one that top it 16'd the last SCG open that looks interesting to you, and just jam it. And learn its interactions. Learn what sucks for you and how you need to sideboard and stuff. I'm totally with you. I 100% agree.
Yeah. And even if you want to brew, I'm going to cut you off now, Mike.
No, go ahead.
Even if you want to brew and you want to build your own decks, playtesting is where you want to be at as far as that's concerned, because it's going to let you test against the decks that are real, you know, quote unquote real in the format. So if you do want to brew, if you do want to make decks, having a playtest group is going to give you an option to actually see if they work or not. It's a lot better than going to an FNM and with a homebrew deck and 4-0-ing and thinking that you're the king of the world. You know, you should definitely have a consistent group of people that, you know, understands how the standard format works or whatever format you're testing for. And that will give you consistent results and feedback. I mean, that's the best thing that you can do to prepare yourself for these big tournaments. I know it's worked for me. I don't think that, you know, a year ago, you know, when I went to Origins the first time and played an open, you know, I did not do nearly as well, as far as that's concerned. And if I had a, you know, a match against Jerry Thompson, I don't think I'd have a chance, just because I wasn't testing. I was just playing FNMs and doing things that I thought worked, not necessarily, you know, having some feedback on what was working and what wasn't. So, I think that starting a playtest group, you know, if that's something that you want to do, that's something that you should really strive for and try to get the best people for in your area and just do it.
Are you suggesting that after, like, someone wins an FNM, they're, like, titanicing it, like, they're, like, Leonardo DiCaprio, like, edge of the boat, king of the world? Like,
you know what? There's, people do. I mean, people
that's true.
Don't.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
This is true. I have seen the people who get excited about the FNM promos, which is nice. Like, you're like, oh man, that's awesome for you. And then they're like, yeah, I did it because I kicked your ass. And you're like, oh, well, okay. So, I want to ask another question about this, though, and take this in a little different direction.
Sure.
So we, in our play group, are lucky enough that we have, you know, we've had some people who are on the Pro Tour in the past. We actually have people who are queued for this Pro Tour, who we play with somewhat consistently. So I would definitely say, like, when I joined this Q group that's out here in Columbus, that I kind of lucked into a group of really good players, and my play skills definitely got up because of it. So sure. What if you don't have, you know, Pro Tour competitors in your play group? Like, you know, right. Can you get better if it's a bunch of, you know, like, average FNM players? How do you get better?
I want to take a position. Morgan, I'm sorry. I'm going to do it now. It's my turn.
Screw everybody.
Yeah. I want to take a position that I don't think is going to be popular. I'm going to go ahead and say no. You, like, if you were just with a bunch of guys who, dude, I got my foil. Is it promo? Is it charm promo this week? You're not going to get better. Like, you're not going to be, oh, you might get better. In an inbred sort of way, right? You guys have your...
Better than your friends. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Right, yeah. But I don't think...
King of the nerds. Always.
Right. Yeah. Like, but you're not going to get better in the, I'm going to top 30 or top 32 or top 16 in SCG Open. You're going to get better within your play group. And I had that experience early in my Magic career, right? Like, I was the king of the world over in an LGS, a local LGS. And I went to Comic Town and got Bash and met you guys and realized I'm terrible.
We all come to that realization.
Yeah, right? And then, like, slowly playing with you guys is getting a little better, getting a lot better than I ever would have having played my entire career just to FNM in this little inbred circle of players who think they're insane. And now that's not to say that they're not good people. I did want to make that clear. I talked bad about an LGS last week. The people at that LGS are the coolest people ever and dear to my heart, and I love hanging out with them every week. But
you're a phony. You're a big fat phony.
No, I mean that. I listened to what I said last week, and I was like, oh, man, I hope that they don't hear that and think I hate them. I hope, like, they're sweet. They're awesome people. But I was talking more about the competitive spike-ish atmosphere of that particular store. And I still believe that, right? Like, that you're not going to become a Tier 1 player by just jamming games against tier 3, tier 2.5 players. I don't know what your opinion was, Morgan. What did you think?
It's difficult. You know, really, the reason that you start a playtest group is because you want to get better. That means you have to acknowledge that you aren't that good right now. So, like, I think it's that turning point that changes players that are like that, that are tier 3 players, tier 2.5 players, to make them tier 2 players, tier 1 players. They have to make that turn. And they also have to be capable of it, which is a lot of, you know, reading, a lot of watching videos, watching other people play that are better than you, listening to other people's advice. You know, that's how you will improve your game if you don't necessarily have a strong player base in your area, definitely have to take a look at what you have available to you and use that. And use that to influence people and teach people, as far as that's concerned. So, the reason you start a playtest group, in my opinion, is to get better and to be better. You have to acknowledge that you need to get better first to do that. So, I think that if you can gather a group of people with that common idea, as far as that's concerned, then it's possible to definitely improve the players around you as well as yourself. It just takes a lot more effort because you have to teach, you have to learn and teach as you go.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it's hard, I think, And I'll say something about myself before, like, I joined this group. Like it can be really easy sometimes to, like, recognize certain strategies as good. And it can be really difficult to recognize why a strategy is good. I mean, I know, thinking back to my former Magic self, you know, in high school, who's playing the jankiest combo decks you could play on the, you know, on the cafeteria table at school, would look at a deck that had Nephelia Drown Yard and be like, how do you win games? I don't get it. And actually would not be able to comprehend how why you would ever want to do that. So I think the playtesting, even if it's not always with the best players, does give you the chance to say, oh, that's how that wins. That's how this does that. Mm-hmm, so I think, right. I still do think you do have to have at least someone who's a little bit better. You can do it yourself, but it makes it more difficult to assess cards. Like I have a lot of pet cards. I've played a lot of janky decks in the past. But like, if you actually want them to be really good, you need someone to be able to look at you and say, you know what, this is not a good card, and you need to know that. This is not working, and you need to know that. And I don't know, maybe if you're in that group of friends, you do have to have somebody who's good enough to go, you know what, maybe not even good enough, maybe who's just self-aware enough to go, you know what, you're not going to get better playing this card.
Right.
Right.
And, like, some people have that sense, and some people learn. You know, some people learn by, like I said, reading articles, watching videos, watching other people play.
Right.
They learn card evaluation. And that's just that's just what it is.
So I guess to solve the question that we originally presented as, can a bunch of, I'm going to use the term droolies, that's what I got on top of my head, can a bunch of droolies test in a group and get better together? Yes, but if and only if X amount of them are self-aware enough to go outside of their group and go, so what are people that we know are better than us doing? Like,
right.
It's easy to look at, like, from a guy from X store in Columbus, and he can look at a guy from Y store and go, oh, we're just as good because we both win FNMs. But, like, you know you're not better than Tom Martell, right? You know you're not better than John Finkel. Like, what are they doing? Like, watch their videos. Like, I'm not better than... Dude, if there were PTQs around and this game wasn't so unlucky, I would just, like, win the Pro Tour, right? Like, there's a reason LSV and them are in the Hall of Fame and have won more stuff in Magic than we ever will.
LSV isn't in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, he's, like, he's on the ballot this year, isn't he?
There you go.
Yeah. No, but, like, so somebody has to be self-aware. Oh, Zynga LSV, get on the Hall of Fame, dude.
I'm sure he's fine. I'm sure he'll be good. I don't think that people are going to be like, well, should I?
Yeah, I think he's in this year. But, like, I think, so that's the answer to the questions. X amount of people in the group had to be self-aware enough to go outside and look at people that they know are better than them for help.
Yeah, I mean, That's why you do it. You don't call it a playtesting group just to get a bunch of your friends together and play Magic. Alright, but playtest group has a connotation of achieving something. You're testing something for some reason. And that to me means testing my decks to make sure that they stack up against the competition and that I can win. You know, that's why I go to testing, because I want to get better and want to make sure that my deck works the way that I want it to so I can win.
Yeah.
So that has to be your goal. That has to be at least one of your goals, if not your main goal,
right,
for your playtesting group.
So is that another thing we could establish for what makes playtesting work? And maybe this is the type and me coming out, like, you need to have established goals for your playtesting group to work. People need to be there for pretty much the same reason.
Yeah, I mean, you have to have a common goal. I mean,
right,
that's important.
Like, you're not playing Kitchen Top Magic, you're playtesting. And that's
correct,
the difference. So that's a good point, though. Like, I think that can go easily missed, right? Like, if your group as a whole doesn't know, like, we're doing this so that some of us queue for the Pro Tour, or we're doing this so whatever your goal is, right? Like, get somebody to a day two of a GP. Whatever your goal is, your group needs to have a goal,
correct,
for your playtesting to be effective. So that's a good distinction, Morgan. I'm glad you pointed that out. That could have went missed.
Can your goal simply be to get better? Is that too vague?
Yes.
I mean, I don't think that's too vague.
I think it needs to be achievable.
I mean, but so getting good
measurable, excuse me.
Sure.
I ask this question as a trap. Because I agree with you, Jordan. I think you can't just say to get better. I think you actually have to say, like, to even if it's the same matchup, you know, maybe pick a similar even matchup, like, I need to win X out of these games. You know what I mean? I don't care if you have someone who you make a play and then someone else walks you through what you could have done. But, like, I think you can have, like, I want to get better, but specifically I want to get better at this. You know what
X
I mean?
Or Y.
Like,
yeah.
I myself, like, an additional goal to getting better, I try to slow myself down. I actually talked with another friend of mine who I went to the message you opened this weekend about you, Morgan, about your camera match. And I was like, man, I really wish I could, you know, had a camera match, you know, just because I want to see what my tells are. And he looked right at me and goes, when you have good cards, you play fast. I was like, oh. He's like, if you have good cards, you are playing faster, even if it's a little bit faster than when you have, you know, bad cards. Like, you're not showing the same decision-making all the way throughout. And I took that to heart. You know what I mean? I'm like, all right, I'm going to try and change this. So
yeah.
I think, and that's something with having other people there who are watching you who can go, okay, you just did this again. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. I guess that might be just a bit too vague. I don't know. I think that's like the purest idea of how a playtest group starts, right? Like, I just, that general idea of like, I just want to get better. Like, I guess that's how you can start, but I think eventually once you start getting into it, then having specific goals is going to be what keeps it going.
Yeah, like how do I, so if you look at getting better as your vision, what are your goals to get to your vision?
Exactly.
Like, Mike needs to play slower. I just need to be able to think through multiple lines of play. Like, I am one of those people that, it's not pull a decision out of a hat type of magic, but it's the first decision I think looks good, I make it. And instead I need to back up and go, okay, what are all alternate lines of play that I can make? And are they better than the one I originally chose? So, like, once we make these further delineations of what we need to do, that makes you a better player once you figure out what do I suck at versus how do I just get good.
So I like that. So if you're going to start playtesting, the question isn't how much better I want to get. It's how much less do I want to suck.
Yeah. Yeah, it's what do I want to not suck at. I think that's actually the centrifugal question. What do I want to not suck at in my magic game?
Sure.
And then from there, you can get better.
But I mean, like, that's something. That's better than nothing. I think that you just have to be inspired, and really want something out of playing Magic. And it escalates. Just like I said, you know, I started playing Magic really casually, and then I was like, I wanted more. So I started playing at FNM, and then I wanted more.
Just
and then
like
I started
cocaine.
Playing. Yeah, I mean, it's the same exact thing.
Yeah,
I should know.
Right? Oh, just kidding.
Wow. does anybody want more?
Okay. I'm sorry.
The Romans want more.
Isn't he already inside me? I don't know. I don't know.
All right. I'm sorry I went there. All right.
Jesus is magic.
So, okay. So, yeah. Yeah, playtesting is a natural step forward from kitchen top magic because you just want to keep getting better and you want to progress. If you're a progressive thinking person, If you're sitting and listening to this podcast going, man, I would love to go to an SCG Open and come in 34th, come in 50th, come in top 16, get a playtesting group, man. Go do it. Set up some goals for yourself. Be type A about it. Just go grind out some games with some friends and get better.
And if you don't live near, like, anyone at all, you know, maybe it might be time to look at possibly investing in Magic Online and making some friends on there.
And if you've never even heard of Magic before, I don't know how you got this far into this podcast.
What are you even doing?
Dude,
go away.
Get a job.
So, I would wait until this beta is over to start mode if I was on that.
Oh, no. Well, I mean, you can play version 3. You can play version
3. No, you can't right now. It's an all-in. It's an opt-in beta.
No, they changed it. They reverted it back.
Someone's playing on V3.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
The last few days has been whatever.
Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, they changed it back because people were complaining.
Because it's awful.
Okay, so let's transition. Right? Like, there was a guy. We talked about how well we did at Star City and how to get good to do good at a Star City. There was a guy at a Star City, Mike, who a little weird.
Okay. So let me preface this. We're going to talk a little bit about celebrity and magic. And that's what celebrity, maybe more pro. Now, what I'm going to say here, I'm not going to trash this person, but I will say that we had a celebrity come up to us. Oh, I'm using this term very, very loosely.
it's his term, really.
He goes by the name of Bard Narson, who I hear is a very fun, happy guy. But we were playing another card game at the Open, a group of probably like 6 or 7 of us, and came up, and this was the dialogue. Okay? Are you Magic players? Yes. Okay. Do you know who I am? As we're at the Star City Open where we got tokens that have his face on it. Yes. All right. Can we do a celebrity round of Cards Against Humanity, which is the game we were playing? And all of us were just kind of dumbfounded. Because maybe he was being totally friendly, but from all of us sitting there, at least, and you guys were there as well, but it came off as just really smart. We're like, I'm a celebrity, and you should let me play. Like, you couldn't just ask, can I play your game? Because all day, we think this opens all the time. It's like apples to apples. People join in. We've met a lot of random people just playing this game. Yeah. And not a single other one of them has come up and said, I'm a celebrity. Can I get in? Okay. And we already answered we're Magic players, and we're at a Star City Open. So let's just be honest. The percentage chance of us knowing who he is pretty high.
Right. We're at his company's tournament, you know?
Exactly.
Like, you have your, yeah, like you said, your face is on a promo token I got today, Rad Elson. the guy who works in videos with Odd Anderson.
That was a stretch.
You know, say that, this is Brad Nelson. I'm going to say his name. He puts his name out there anyways. I mean, that's his thing. Right. So my thought goes back and forth on this. I mean, what are the expectations of a Magic pro? I'm not going to go as far to actually say they're really all celebrities. I mean, in our little culture, their little counterculture, maybe. But true celebrity, I don't think they ever actually match that. They are impressive players, though. He has accomplished more things than any of us have.
Correct.
But I don't enjoy the, I'm going to call it condescension, because that's what it felt like there. Like, hey, I'm better Magic players than you, and you should know who I am. Let me play your game. Or if it's just a random guy, he could just say, hey, can I play? And we'd be like, oh, it's cool. We would probably actually afterwards, while we're drinking, would have been like, hey, we play Cards Against Humanity with Brad Nelson. Right. Instead, the entire exchange is just awkward for no reason.
Yeah, the thing that blows my mind is the initial, like, if he would have came up and been like, hey, I'm Brad Nelson from Star City, can I play? Is a lot better than, do you know who I am?
100%.
As if you're wrong if you don't. Like, what if I'm just some rando that came to this, like, Origins thing? Like, I played Kitchen Table Magic, and it was at Origins, and then I was like, hey, I'll go do a side draft. Like, that'd be fun. And then this guy's like, dude, do you know who I am? And then what would he be like if we were like, no?
Like, yeah, that's how I understand what the, that's exactly it, because that question was asked with the expectation of being like, of course we know who you are. Did you need to ask this question?
Right.
So, I don't know. So, I want to pose to you guys with this. Like, what are your thoughts on it? How are pros supposed to act? Because I know a lot of people, okay, people in our play group as well, who, you know, I played some pros who, man, they are not, they don't want to talk, okay? They're not friendly. And a lot of people get really angry about that. But they don't, there's nothing that says they have to be friendly. You know what I mean?
Right.
So what is the standard here? Like, I what do you think?
My best encounter with a pro, I'm somebody that when I go, like, I come from a StarCraft background where we have our own mini celebrities, right? And I'm someone that when I go to an event, whether, like, in StarCraft, it was purely as a spectator every time. I hate talking to people that are there to do their job. Because if at my job of picking up trash, some kid was like, yo, man, can I get your autograph on my trash picker-upper? I'd be like, dude, bro, I'm sorry.
Your hand?
I use a little claw. But, like, dude, bro, like, I'm trying to do my job, you know? Like, that's obviously, a really ridiculous example. But, I hate bugging people in general. And, hey, it took me a lot, at GP Charlotte, it took me a lot of courage to walk up to Cedric Phillips. And I approached him and I was like, hey man, I'm a big fan of, you know, cause it was before the tournament started, so I didn't feel too weird, but I was like, hey man, like, I'm a big fan of the show and stuff. And he was like, oh dude, like, you like my show? That's sweet. And he took like 10 minutes to sit there and talk to me. And that was insane. And he was like really polite, and he was just like more humbled by the idea that like some random walked up to him and asked him about his show and asked him about Seattle. And he took the time to pull out his cell phone and show me restaurants in Seattle because I told him I was going to be going there for a conference. And, like, he was just this big, humble experience for him. And I was so impressed. And I think that's how pros should act, right, as human beings, not above the game, you know? Like, that's how people should act.
Well, no, okay, right? Now that's the key I'm looking for here. Is it should a pro act this way, or should a nice person just ask that way? But you walked up to somebody, you know, who you only know because of their internet presence, because of their card prowess. That's the only reason you wanted to talk to them. So,
right.
What is the expectation they should act that way? I mean, essentially, you're a stranger. I was told not to talk to strangers. So, should they be nice to you? Do they actually have to?
Yeah, I don't think they have to at all. I mean, like,
but you just said that's how people should act. Now, well, I've got, I think, you. People, you're stuck.
So I think people should be humans to each other, right? Like, if Cedric just would have been like, "Hey, man, like, that's like, I'm glad you like the show, but I'm really just here to do a job," and like. I'm here just to win a tournament.
Okay, so you would have been okay with that.
Yeah, I would have understood, I think, because I think, like I said at the beginning when I prefaced, these people are, they're ultimately working, right? Like, they're ultimately, like, these are all living for some of these people. So I think So, but to put that in the counter spot to your encounter with Brad Nelson, it's really weird for him to abuse
that. See, now here's the deal, too. Like, was he abusing it, or is that just how he, you know, I mean, I guess I didn't track him down later or ask him, because I had no desire to do so.
Right, because he's tilting enough as an Israeli.
It wasn't really tilting, it was just like, no, okay,
I mean, like,
and then you're done.
I mean, right, like,
yeah, exactly. And I just wonder, like, I don't know, is that just like one of those instances where like if he heard this, he'd be like, oh man, I didn't realize it sounded like that. Or he'd be like, wow, look at these asshats for saying this. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know which one it is. I guess it's impossible to tell.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, to say the least, introducing yourself like that is awkward and causes awkward situations. You know, there's two ways to really look at that. I mean, it could be that he was just trying to be a braggart and just trying to be like, hey, do you know who I am? I'm, you know, Brad Nelson, whoa, blah, 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 you should let me play your game because I'm a celebrity and we can have
a celebrity. That's exactly
around.
What he said.
Hey.
Yeah,
but I mean, like,
cut that, I guess.
But it's just like, what if he's just really awkward around people? Like, what if that's just the case? And like, that's his in. It's like, hey, you guys already know me, so it's okay if I just, you know, try to flaunt myself as being a celebrity.
I don't know. I've watched Trainwreck Tuesday. I don't think that's the case, but I see the point you're making.
Right, I mean, it's just like, it's a poor way to introduce yourself, 100%. But it's something that people have probably done all the time. Any sort of fame. I'm talking, Jordan, do you know what that means?
Shut your mouth.
Any sort of celebrity, whether it be small, on the smallest scale imaginable, your local TV weatherman, to the biggest star that you can think of in Hollywood, will try to abuse that in some facet, as far as that is concerned. So we're not saying, you know, I'm not trying to defend that or saying that he was necessarily abusing it. But if he was, it wouldn't be surprising, as far
that's
as
fair.
I'm concerned.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah. So,
I almost disagree, right? Like, because I think this is something that needs looked at on an individual basis rather than just this broad sweeping thing where we say, well, we don't know, maybe he's just awkward. Do you really take Brad Nelson as the guy who has social deficiencies?
You, like, I don't know.
He plays magic. Come on here, I'm gonna play
yeah,
magic.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's kind of a claim to fame of our game. Ooh, did you like that rhyme?
pretty good. Thank you, Dr. Seuss.
And most of his stuff is through an online presence. But at the same time, he was the one who walked up.
Right.
So, I mean, I would have to assume that, I don't know, if a million other nerds can walk up and just say, hey, I love this game, can I play? That's what he could have done too, and that's
right.
What anybody could do too.
I think to just further get on the idea that just because maybe he's awkward, it doesn't make it appropriate, right? Like, he could be awkward and inappropriate just because, like, I'm a celebrity. Let's have a celebrity game of
and
magic.
I'm not necessarily trying to make excuses for him. I'm just saying, you know, there's two ways that, you know, there's multiple ways that we can look at it.
Sure.
I mean, to get back on the subject, the idea of, you know, how should people act? I mean, people are going to be people, and I've heard plenty of good and bad from a lot of different things, and, you know, It's unfortunate that he presented himself in such a way that would make us think that he was trying to use his fame to impress us. Because we don't need to be, we're not going to imagine him to be impressed, as far as that's concerned. It's nice to see these players that do play on a higher level than us.
Beat him, hell. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like, we don't necessarily see that inequality with us just being human beings and him just being a human being, but maybe he perceives that. And maybe he feels that he needs to differentiate himself from us, you know, as far as that's concerned, which is unfortunate.
And we definitely, I mean, I would also say that we, I mean, in this situation, we did not. But in a lot of situations, Magic players in general also create this differentiation. I'll say, like, when, you know, we both played Jerry Thompson. When I played Jerry Thompson, it was a really enjoyable match. Guy was very nice. But, man, every single person, like, in our group and that I knew just came crowding around and were like, like, most of the time, if we're at, like, an event, people, they'll joke around us, and everyone's like, hush, hush, watch, watch. And I'm like, yes, I'm playing an impressive player, but at the same time, like, you're adding to the gravitas that maybe doesn't need to be there. But then again, there's
right.
a feature match area, so that's
yeah, it was
point.
When I played Jerry, I was at a table. I was just,
at the end of the table, table 13, there were still people that were crowding around, you know,
right.
Popular faces in the Magic community that I recognized from watching, you know, the Open Series streamed and everything like that. You know, it does make it feel vastly more important than just playing against some rando that's still very good that could potentially be better than any of the pros out there. It adds something to the game that, definitely puts you know, potentially a little bit more on edge. I mean, it was nice that, you know, with playing against, you know, Jerry, and even having all these people around that I could still keep my cool, but it was there. You could feel it.
Oh, it was very
different, than playing someone else or playing, you know, people that you see every day or playing someone random at a tournament. A completely different experience that I had not, you know, really had a chance to experience until this weekend. But it's going back, as I said, people will always be people. And people make awkward, like, you've never gone up to someone and introduced yourself awkwardly? Like, it does happen.
Oh, right.
It's very true.
It's unfortunate that he wanted to, you know, use his, you know, celebrity, you know, his somewhat celebrity, status to influence in some facet. That's the only reason why you bring it up, is because you want us to either be impressed with you or what have you. It's like, it's unfortunate that happened, just because I don't think that is necessarily appropriate. These are still, like, I'm still a human being, you're still a human being. You're good at something, well, I'm good at something too. You just are good at Magic, and we happen to be here for Magic, but, you know, right. I'm good at this, but there's not a wide enough base.
I would say better Magic players were there. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
I will make this you know, statement about this. I mean, like it or not, I there's a number of pros that I really do like, enjoy reading, watching. David Ochoa is one of them. I have a signed token from him, mustache and all. Great achievement of my life. But when I talk to him, who is very friendly, and yes, he has a token with his face on it, and he's like, "Oh, yeah, if you want the sign, that's fine." And he definitely felt like I can't believe you want the sign, but if you do, here's my stupid signature. You know what I mean?
Right.
So. When I say, oh man, you know, or like Tom Martell, I met that guy too. Yep, very, very nice. You know, enjoy talking to him. So I have positive memories of these people who want to be celebrity, correct? Now when I think of Brad Nelson, okay, I'm going to think back to the time that the guy introduced himself as a Magic celebrity that we should all know, and that's going to jade me every single time he writes something, everything else, fairly or unfairly. That's how it's going to be.
Yeah, you're going to look through that lens of this guy thinks very highly of himself, and perhaps unnecessarily. And I will too. And just like my positive experience with Cedric, every time I read or watch a video of Cedric, I'm going to go, man, this guy's actually just a genuinely good person. So I completely hear what you're saying. And right. I don't even think you're judging. You're just using your experience of like what you know with him as a human, right? You're just right. Like, oh, this guy was a dick one time. And that's right. Like,
but the question that I posit to you guys, as far as that's concerned, does that benefit you or hurt you in the long run?
You know, that's totally a fair question. You also have to, I mean, I guess, is the information he puts out there dire, or any celebrity you have, or celebrity, I'm going to keep using the term celebrity despite not agreeing with it.
I mean, I understand that you can pose that question, but let's take a look at some of the decks that have come along that he has had a hand in, as far as that's concerned. I think that Brad Nelson is a very good Magic player and does definitely understand how to build decks. Since he has built decks that have continued to be prevalent in the standard format. So whether he is a pompous human being or not is irrelevant to me, because I can read his articles and take them with a grain of salt and understand and comprehend whether it's something that I enjoyed reading or not, and whether it's something that I got information from that is valuable and key, regardless of who he is as a person. Because I don't care. If he's pompous, whatever. People are pompous and are terrible that I have to deal with on a daily basis, but it's whatever. You're going to act that way, that's fine, but I am going to get the information that I want and try as much as I can to look at it without, you know, some sort of filter, you know, changing my opinions. If how Brad Nelson is as a person makes me think that the valuable information that he's providing is wrong or bad, then that is a bad reflection on me, in my opinion. In my opinion.
Right. Okay, well, fine. Just call me an asshole. That's fine, Morgan.
No, I'm just saying. I'm just saying. Like, you know, because information is important as a Magic player. That's the most important thing you can have when playing a game and when understanding the game. anything that cuts you off from that information is bad, in my opinion.
I don't think Mike's saying that he's not going to read Brad Nelson's articles, right? Like,
No, obviously not.
Definitely.
I think he's just saying...
I'm not going to say, like, if he makes a good deck, I'll play him, you know what I mean? But at the same time, the fact that he made a good deck shouldn't allow him to talk to people the way he does.
Right. Fair?
Sure. I mean, that's fine, but I really don't... I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't care.
We're looking at a very isolated incident, but it was a very interesting discussion just on... I mean, that may not be who he is at all as a person, and I don't know, maybe...
First impressions matter.
Right.
They do. They very much do.
And this is a very clear example of we had a first impression of another human being, and it was not positive, and... That's how this is going to go. And I totally hear what Morgan's saying. Like, if he makes another Naya Blitz equivalent deck, I'm gonna play it. I'm going to read it. I'm just going to think, well, Pompous Tick made this deck. That's how it's going to go. But whatever.
But I mean, like, the only reason that I even, like, bring that up, because there are a lot of different opinions. Rather, it's not even, like, a conversation about celebrities, but, like, even within your local game store, there are a lot of people with a lot of different opinions, and they're probably people that have strong personalities. And sometimes I think that really ruins the community. Is people that have an idea about themselves more than what it is, rather than, you know, really bonding with the community as far as that's concerned. And it goes both ways. It goes, you know, it shows, you know, that it can be negative on the person that thinks they're better, you know, or is pompous. It does think that they're somewhat of a celebrity. But it goes bad on people that do judge them, you know, for that as far as that's concerned. I mean, it cuts you off from another person, you know, forever, and it's just a human thing.
We can all be friends, Morgan. We can all be friends.
But I feel it's hard. It's definitely hard. I feel that as a community, you know, we are growing, and when communities do grow, you do run a risk of, you know, muddling the mixture as far as that's concerned.
But I'll make the summative statement. Okay, Brad Nelson has contributed many things to the Magic community. As from all around what I've seen, actually fairly funny on his streams. Anything else, I've enjoyed myself watching them, but. If you're going to be an employee of the company that's running the tournament that travels around the country and is the biggest, you know, tournament provider in the entire, you know, Magic world, you should probably not introduce yourself that way when everyone knows you're an employee of that company.
That's true.
You should have the wherewithal as an adult to go, you know what, this isn't how you talk to people, especially when they know you work for them.
Right. But, I mean, can we really call Brad Nelson an adult? Let's be fair.
Guys.
People call me an adult.
The best thing that could
happen. If I'm an adult, he's an adult.
The best thing that could happen for our podcast is for him to hear about this. Because then he's going to get mad and everybody's going to listen to it.
He will get mad at you guys.
Maybe if he actually, and this is a big, you know, gigantic, huge, not going to happen, what if. But if he did hear this, okay, maybe he'd go, oh, man, maybe I shouldn't have spoken that way. Okay. Or he's going to not care and hate us and then, well, my negative implication is true. So either way,
suspicion
it's a win-win.
Correct, sure. He'll either reform or not. But, you know, people are just kind of where they are. It's an unfortunate situation that happened, especially with someone that is, you know, sort of a face of Magic, on how a lot of people might get introduced with it. You know, people that do watch streams that are currently watching something else be like, what's this Magic thing all about? And they might see him on there and be like, well, you know, I want to follow him. And, you know, it's unfortunate that we had an experience that might tarnish that. Because if you are a face of Magic, if you are someone that's prominent, you know, something that we might even be striving to do through this podcast. listen. There's no reason that we ourselves, you know, can't be somewhat of a face for Magic.
Oh, absolutely. I think everybody that takes a public scene is an ambassador for Magic.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really cool thing that our game is at the point now where we have ambassadors for Magic. Like, right.
All the way to the UN.
Yeah. Think 5-10 years ago. Did anybody imagine, like, the blow up that Magic would have? Absolutely not, right? Like,
pretty sure it was dead. Like, I thought it was dead.
Yeah. Did anybody imagine that we would be worried that Brad Nelson would misrepresent Magic in a public setting? Were we like, oh, dude, like, did you see that, like, Morgan McCarl or, like, even on a bigger scale, Jerry Thompson, like, cussed out Aranto yesterday? Magic players look miserable now. Like, we wouldn't care. We'd be like, oh, like, whatever. Yeah, get him, Jerry. Like, but, like, that's so sweet for our game that we can even have this discussion. So to put this on a positive spin, Brad, thanks for being the asshole we need.
Love
that. That is... There's not going to be an episode 4, is there?
At least not on MTG Cast, right? Maybe it's an MP3 on my computer, but
we're laughing all the way to hell on this one. All right. Well,
we should probably get off, Brad.
So as per usual, we're kind of going to move on to the wrap up phase of this podcast and, you know, discuss what's going on this weekend. Obviously, you know, being the summer, there's definitely a lot of PTQs, a lot of, you know, local tournaments that we're going to be trying to attend. A big one is actually happening up in Canton. And I think, Mike, you have a little bit more information on that.
Yes, it's actually Freedom Games. It's hosting up in Canton.
Sick.
So this is Canton, Ohio. I say this because there's a lot of people around here who know Kenton. It's a very tiny little place, and that is not where you're going. It's about 2 hours north. Yes, the PTO up there. That area of Ohio, much like, you know, Columbus is got a lot of good players and grinders. So I'm going to go up there and X2 like I normally do. So I will be playing, as I said, the Naya mid range again. Probably messing the sideboard up a little bit. I think we didn't see, like, I mean, I don't know about you guys. You guys play against Junk Aristocrats at all this weekend?
I actually dodged that matchup pretty well.
Yeah, it wasn't a control match, so no.
I don't
think it was there very much. I think it might be, really? Act 2 was all over the place. I saw a lot of Act 2.
I saw a lot of Act 2.
I go back to what I said before. I don't think the deck was... I think the deck might have been a flash in the pan. Like, it hit the format at the right time. It might come back. Mm-hmm. But I think with that in mind, like, certain cards, like, I was playing 3 Rest in Peace, and that's what Brian Bronduin had suggested. And they were bad. So I'm going to change the sidebar around a little bit and going to stock up with some more Sublime Archangels and see what I can do.
Yeah.
Sick, man. Idea. The best thing I did in my deck, by the way, Mike, thank you for talking to me about the Nighthawks and the main board. For those of you that don't know, I play Jund. Sire of Insanity is awful. And Vampire Nighthawk in the main board, like, I randomly thought it would be a good idea against the aggro, which I didn't play because 001 draw is great. But Vampire Nighthawk is good in every matchup, and it's so relevant. So I'm glad we talked about that, Mike. Totally the spicy thing I did this week, I guess. Much less spicy than a Sublime Archangel, but...
Oh, man. So good, though. I like when people win, when I lend them cards. You stole me a beer, by the way. I'm just telling you.
I do. You're right. I absolutely do.
I think I might still try to make it to the PTQ if I can, as far as that's concerned. Jordan, are you doing anything fun and exciting with your Magic career this weekend?
Well, see, I need 14 more Planeswalker points to get a buy for GP Miami next week. So the goal is, I don't have the money necessarily to go to Canton. So if I can get 14 points at FNM on Friday, I'm not going to go. But I'm not going to forsake a buy at GP Miami for, like, $30.
You could just play, like, Saturday Standard as well. But I mean, it's probably going to carpool. So, I mean, if that's what you want to do, let me know.
Yeah, no, like, I would obviously rather PTQ grind. Because, like, best case scenario rate, like, I top 16, top 8 the guy, and then I get a billion and then get a second buy. So, yeah, I'm 14 short. Like, if I, like, just do terrible at FNM, like, 0-2 drop type of terrible, which I don't believe I will, but... If I do that, then I'll probably go to the PTQ and like.
Did the open post for you already? Because it didn't post for me yet.
It did. I got 87 points from it.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. Because there was 21 participation points, which is like wow, wow. So 589 players. Yeah. So I'm probably gonna do that PTQ it up this weekend. If not for Planeswalker points, just to practice for Miami.
Fair enough.
And then I really want to win a PTQ. I don't think it's there for me skill-wise yet, but I am the luckiest Magic player in demand. So
it's true.
Why not try it there?
And are you still going to stick with Jund?
I am. You know, it plays all the best cards in the format, in my opinion. If I draw the right half of my deck, I win. And if I draw the worst half of my deck, I can still win. So
awesome.
I'm going to go ahead and go with that. I do think I have a bad matchup against the Hyper Aggros, but we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, and if I do end up going to the PTQ, I had to flip a few things around in my schedule, but if I do end up going, then I'm definitely going to stick with Junk Reanimator. I think that my run with it was really nice. There are definitely some changes that I need to make as far as that's concerned to the deck. But you know, I need to take a look at some other deck lists that are showing up and kind of decide what I want to make changes to, but I think I'm definitely going to stick with it as far as that's concerned. I think that is going to be everything. Does anyone else have anything to add before we close the show out?
Oh man, we really should. You can get a Slime Time t-shirt. I can get a Sublime Time t-shirt.
Oh my god. We broke it.
What kind of
hashtag
shirt do
game,
I get?
Everyone.
What kind of shirt do I get?
Douchebag.
I don't know, like a shirt that says Devour My Flesh? I got nothing.
Oh, you guy. Alright. Go. Oh, well, anyway. Inside jokes on a podcast for the public are always the best.
Well, I was trying to make a pun off a card that you play. I mean, I don't
even play Devour Flesh, dude.
Oh, well, I don't know then.
Thrag My Tusk?
That's, I don't know about that.
You should just get a picture of Rakdos making a return at a Target.
That'd be awesome.
Bowling shirts, by the way, I'm gonna go ahead and order those for us, so. Once bowling shirts come in, we're going to get a picture, and that will be our logo on Twitter, so the viewers don't have to look at an egg anymore.
The egg is hot, though.
I mean,
it's so meta.
It's like, what we lay every time we do this.
Typically. All right, well.
Thanks for listening.
thanks for listening, folks. This has been another episode of At Your End Step, and thanks for stopping by.
Hey, Morgan, can I move to my turn?
Go fuck yourself.